SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. I just looked at the, I just was looking down actually to see what the date was because I was exchanging comments with Johnny earlier about spring because it's spring-like. We had rain last night. I went outside at some point. I took out garbage or something and it was a kind of a drizzly rain, you can really tell the difference between spring rain and winter rain or late winter rain. It felt spring-like on March 3rd, now March 4th, and so we got 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks on the calendar portion, but it does feel like spring, and this weekend they did run the spring fever, right, at Oaklawn. So that was that had spring in its step. But this weekend, first Saturday in March, that'll cement it. And later this afternoon, we'll be able to dig in and look at the fields that were coming together, as we discussed yesterday with Andy and with John White, Santa Anita, and Tampa and Aqueduct. And there's plenty of other good racing in store for us, I think, over the weekend. You've got the Honeybee at Oaklawn and the Hot Springs on the sprint side for the older males. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great weekend. Let me slip in a Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, and our website too, stevebick.com. And I'll take a minute before we dive into today's undertaking. The reaction from yesterday, I thought, was pretty notable. And obviously, you know, those of you that are, you know, just having listened in the last hour and a half, if you're somebody that listens to half of the previous day's show and then into the live portion today, Dr. Alday's invaluable expertise, just to provide background, and then Mark Cassie's really heartfelt and sincere concerns and alarm bells. I thought he hit all the right notes yesterday, and you know, plenty of reaction and recirculation of Mark's commentary. And I saw Graham Motion concur with it, and Chad Brown, who's now an active Twitterer. Chad said the same thing. He said, absolutely a drug that isn't necessary. He says in 12 years, his 12-year training career, has never used it. And, you know, I think you had enough. You've got enough of a coalition of experienced and respected horsemen and veterinarian personnel and so forth to, you know, put Cassie's suggestion into action. And on that topic, actually, we can use that as the segue into part of today's kind of news roundup. And I had mentioned in passing yesterday early that I did want to visit that, you know, I guess confusion that last week's CHRB rule change that went into effect on Sunday. And there was a conference call yesterday and to really bring all the parties into alignment and to get everybody on the same page as to what those rules that were causing concern and alarm, what was permissible and what isn't. And the problematic phraseology had been more or less I don't want to call it a suggestion because it was a rule, but it was written so that people, when they read it, it said nothing but grain, hay, water allowed in the horse from entry day, from entry to running. And horseman said, wait a minute. wait a minute. What about, what about giving them electrolytes? What about giving them the vitamin regimen? What about giving them ulcer medications? I mean, the things that are just part of their dietary program. And that was what was clarified. I'd like to get, I guess Owen Hardy right now is representing the trainers. But it seems that everybody was much more comfortable with that. Originally, the note that was circulated said, horses entered to race shall only be given water, hay, and grain until post time. No drugs, medications, or substances. And so obviously horsemen said, wait, what are you talking about? There's, there's plenty of things that are 100% innocuous. And that was all, everybody got on board. There were two parts of it. There was the clarification to things like jugs and so forth and Gastroguard. Then there is a clarification that's going to be necessary about 72 hours or 48 hours regarding non-steroidals, as we touched on a little bit yesterday, specifically Butte, as we came up yesterday, phenylbutazone, Flunixin, and ketoprofen. So those three, because the rule as written, again, it said the entry day is considered midnight at the day of entry. So that would be technically 72 hours or more if they're entering, if you're entering Wednesday for Saturday. So they're going to adjust that at the next CHRB meeting to be, back to the 48 hours, the 48-hour window. So essentially just clarifying the difference between 72 hours and 48. But when I referenced this yesterday, that over the weekend when a reminder of these rules went to everybody. And then, of course, as Dale Roman said on Monday, I mean, what goes on Twitter is just amazing when it comes to misinformation and conclusion jumping. And it really serves zero purpose. Using conventional lines of communication, much better served in areas like this. While we're in California, let's talk about Mike Smith and Bill Finley in TDN discussing a conversation. They had a conversation with Smith returning from Saudi Arabia, and Smith brings up a very fair point that this penalty, which, you know, considering the 3-day schedule in California, considering the 3-day schedule, essentially is, you know, close to a month for him. If California and apparently, you know, domestically, they're going to honor the suspension. And Smith specified a number of, you know, issues with the way in which this is being handed down, including 2 days for him going somewhere to weigh in as instructed and not finding a scale, apparently. And, you know, then there's the whole matter of, you know, Smith basically, you know, riding to win, and the proximity of the TV video Jeep on the inside of the rail, traveling along, and he says distracting Midnight Bisou the whole time. And so he's trying to keep her, you know, on task. And, oh, he hit her 14 times, but they told him hours earlier you could only hit 10. I mean, you go over there and you operate under, you know, under their cavalier and you know, rather inspecific rules, and this is the result. And then there's the people saying, well, he deserves it because he hit her 14 times when he was only supposed to hit. Are you people? You got to be kidding with that. Oh yeah, those four extra swats. That's it. Absolutely, hit them where it hurts. 50,250 for each extra hit. The whole thing is insane. Just ridiculous. I mean, amazing. And the fact that the CHRB, they obviously have no choice but to reciprocate, quote unquote, because, you know, if they don't, then they're going to get, you know, attacked by PETA. I mean, this is what you invited. This is the jackpot that we were steered into. And it's funny, the suggestion was just made to me that Smith should be happy that, you know, they didn't drag him into a public square and take a handoff. It's such a forward modern society that they're running over there. I'm sorry. I said from word go, the whole concept was off-putting and should have been just absolutely kept at arm's length. I don't... Awful. Just, it's amazing that we would... I'm just not going to get... I'm not going to get distracted by this. Really amazing. I want to talk about the Breeders' Cup. Breeders' Cup upped some purses yesterday, if you didn't see this. This is terrific. Classic up to $7 million now. And the Turf, $6 million. The Dirt Mile, Dirt Mile, $2 million? Okay. I don't know. But anyway... they're also going to start paying down to 10th. So a total of $4 million in the purses. And we're going to have to get either Dr. Bramlage or Drew Fleming, maybe, talk about the adopting of, and I want to go through them, not right this second, but I do want to go through the, they're going to adopt those suggestions made in Dr. Bramlage's post-cup investigation into Mongolian groom. It's a lot of formalizing of what is already, you know, a good program of monitoring the horses. But there is some formalities that'll be etched out of Dr. Bramlage's report. And well worth delving into. All right. There's something I reached out to a couple different arenas to go back to Monday's mention about Catherine Morrell, the Canadian eventer who was killed over the weekend with her mount Carry On. And I, at some point, I got to get somebody from the equestrian world who's, you know, been watching what's gone on in racing, because it's quite remarkable to me. There isn't any furor over the incident. There's been a widespread acknowledgement. People saying, "Well, it's really dangerous. Our game's really dangerous too." Back after this, I've got a fun visit getting going. Pete Fornital and Justin Dew in the next hour.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want an online tournament that boasts no rake, skim, or takeout with a $10,000 first prize? Here it is. Play ExpressBet Live online Saturday, March 21st. ExpressBet Live is for account holders only, with no registration or other pesky fees. Simply make a live $20 wager on one horse in 10 competition races. Earn the most and collect $10,000. Plus, there's from $1,000 to $4,000 in additional prizes. The top 30 finishers automatically qualify for the $50,000 ExpressBet Showdown. Sweep the card and earn a juicy $5,000 bonus. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Visit ExpressBet.com today and qualify for a $100 bonus. Then register free for ExpressBet Live, the best tournament value going. Play live online with ExpressBet Saturday, March 21st, and it could be your day, but only if you play. Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Public Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
I preach, my dear friends, you're about to receive on John Barleycorn, nicotine, and the temptations of Eve.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
No
No barking by the sewer sign. Hot dogs, my razor broke. Water dripping up the spout, but I don't care. Let it all hang out. Hanging from a pine tree by my knees, sunshine through the shade. Nobody knows what it's all about. Too much, man. Let it all hang out.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes in, and didn't get a chance to herald our first visit as we do some contest conversation, as usual, hour one on Wednesdays, and we'll get to Pete Fornitz Allen a little bit. But if you didn't see Justin Dew's very mirthful recap of not just NHC, but really his whole year of contest play, you need to read it. I sent out the link to his website, lonespeed.com, and Justin Dew joins us. Good morning.
Steve, first, hold on. I'm flipping through my dictionary here to see what mirthful means. Yet another Steve Vick word that I have to look up as I listen to your show.
Well, it's fun for the whole family. It's
educational. I'm going to have my eight-year-old and almost seven-year-old start listening to your show more frequently so they have the best vocabulary of anybody at their elementary school.
Well, who is it that oh my gosh, who is it that when they drive their grade school children to school? Actually, I mean, over the years, there's some people that would listen to the show and driving the kids to school, and those kids are now in college. But I forget who it was. Occasionally, somebody.
Whoever they are, I'm sure they're exceptional horse players at this point that they spent their childhood listening to at the races.
Well, they may have had their interest kindled in one arena or another. It doesn't have to necessarily be limited to to racing. Some of them might have gone into food service. there's no telling what they picked up listening, but some of them heard you the last time you were on the show, which I'm trying to think. Does it go back
it was
to
NHC last year? So it was NHC, right. 2019. It was just minutes after I had made it into day three, and I think I was about five or six vodkas deep at that point, as I had to sweat out the last several optional races. And yes, always fun being on the show. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, you've really started to put the spurs to the website, the Lone Speed, writing with more regularity, and plenty of people came into contact with you from your early foray around the game and turf publicity essentially, and you kind of have been flirting with various forms of the game as a horse player and in communication. You talk about that evolution before we talk about your NHC experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think there aren't many people who are fortunate enough to be able to make their living following their passion. I mean, obviously you're one of them. It would be a dream for, I think, any big fan of horse racing, horse player or whatever, to be able to make a living talking about the sport they love, their passion. And I've kind of flirted with ways to try to do that. I started off writing for KentuckyDerby.com. That's when you and I met. That's going back, 13 years, I guess.
Wow.
And, you'll see, I guess we're going almost 2 years ago, I started up Lone Speed with an idea of what I wanted to build it into. And, kind of started at the bottom and worked my way up and was getting to the point where I was actually getting, a pretty regular daily following. I mean, not a lot of people. I don't think a ton of people who spend their days reading horse racing blogs or listening to podcasts. I mean, we know the dedicated fans do that. But about a year ago, a job opportunity came my way, and I guess I had to say I wasn't brave enough to turn it down. And I kind of put Lone Speed to the side a little bit. I still write when I can, when I think I have something interesting to write about. And as I tell my good friend Ed DeRosa, I'm on his radio show once a week. Someday I'm going to make Lone Speed an actual thing. It's not just going to be a personal blog where I rant and rave and talk about bad beat stories and give out the occasional winner. I'd really like to do something fun with it and, make it a place for people to go. And whether they're new horse players, or seasoned tournament players, a place folks can come and maybe try to learn something new here and there. That's kind of what I'd really like to make out of it one day.
Very nice. And in the meantime, you continue to meet people, and certainly this second trip to NHC last month contributed, and you made yourself very popular. One of the funniest moments of the broadcasts was when Pete asked Tommy Massis, "Well, if you can't win, who are you rooting for?" And he said, "Justin Doo." He gave me a $2 win ticket.
Yeah, I bet I put about 20 bucks on myself in the book there. I bought 10 $2 win tickets, and I handed them out to people. I don't know if you remember this or not, Steve, but back at the Kentucky Derby in 07, the year Street Sense won, I gave out $1 Exacta boxes to about 20 or so people. You were one of them. And I remember the two horses that I boxed were No Biz Like Show Biz and Zanhero. And when I handed it to you, you had to restrain your laughter. It was almost like, you know, how long until I can throw this on the floor? I thought it'd be a nice gesture just to, you know, hand out a few. But, yeah, Tommy did have a $2 win ticket on me at, 150-1, I guess, I think I was. So, yeah, that ended up being worthless.
Well, as it happens, that ticket could come in, at least with the trainers, all these years later, because a Barkley tag Steve Asmussen exacta from the trainer side could very well come to pass all these years later this year.
Well, before we get into it, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sure someone on your show has given out this horse. There's another Asmussen horse that I'm really interested in on the Derby trail, and I think we're going to see him here in a couple of weeks, and that's Chestertown, the New York bred for Western Thoroughbreds. Who I'm telling you, it's early, and I run the risk of looking exceptionally silly by saying this, but a lot of similarities between that horse and a number of horses that have run second Kentucky Derby in recent years: Golden Soul, Commanding Curve, Country House. I kind of see some similarity there. They don't put up flashy buyer speed figures. They don't make that big move. I kind of put Keen Ice from a few years ago in that category. I know he didn't run second in the Derby, but he had some trouble. But that's the Asmussen horse that I've got my eye on. It's Chestertown. Let's see if he can earn some Derby points and maybe sneak into the field.
He's slow. I mean, but he's going to plod along, and we'll see as the distances increase. And it's kind of strange because, you know, of course, his dam, Artemis Agraterra, I mean, she was a 7/8 little speedball. It's very odd that this one is as sort of plotty as he is.
They paid $2 million dollar price tag on that horse.
Yep. And then they got some of it back because the Bromans bought back in. And I think we came up. I guess it was ahead of Risen Star weekend with Marcus Hirsch, when we were handicapping, because Asmussen was clearly spoon feeding him and you know, taking his time with the allowance, you know, the two allowance tries. So, but at a mile and a quarter, if he can finish second or somehow win. You know, one, because he's going to get at least one chance here to qualify. Well, you know, when you mentioned Zanhero, who I loved and it was a huge fan of, and he's the kind of horse. You know, Asmussen seems to have a couple of these every season. You know, a horse that is a mile and a quarter pedigree type that will be, you know, galunking along and pick up a piece, and that could be a good identifier actually on that front. So, all right,
was looking at Lee an Asmussen horse who ran?
Yeah, of course, Derby? Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe he does it again. Who knows?
Well, Sid Fernando, who gave everybody Looking at Lee that year, as well as the two Dallas horses. We'll wait for Sid. Sid's invaluable when it comes to who's going to be a clunk-up exotic candidate in Derby. Mm-hmm. We'll talk pedigree focus with Sid in hour two today. Let's talk about this fun column and the reasons you'll be back, because you really, I thought, brought up the conundrum that the contest player faces in one form or another, in terms of having an experience seeing what worked for the most successful players, trying to be cognizant of that, and then incorporating elements of it into your play going forward. But that plan doesn't always come to successful fruition.
Yeah, that's true. And it's been, you know, it's weighed on my mind a lot as I kind of wrote there in my post on Loan Speed that I would have to say it's maybe the weakest part of my game is kind of getting out of my own way mentally and struggling with, you know, the lessons, if you can call them that, you know, a lesson that I learned one day, trying to apply it the next time where it actually cost me. I think the takeaway that I got about myself from writing that piece was that if you're going to move forward, whether you're in contests or you're betting through the windows, you have to move forward with conviction. Because if you don't have that conviction, you kind of allow yourself to overthink things, to outthink yourself, to second guess yourself. And for me, that's where the problems have come from. There's no doubt about it. Now, there's no substitute for brilliant handicapping. Okay, so people like Paul Sherman, people like Doc Trezza, the people that we see near the top of the leaderboard seemingly almost all the time, you know, they're better handicappers than I am. So I really don't think there's a substitute for that. I think even the most settled mind, the most reasonable approach, you know, isn't going to make a dent in, you know, the advantage that some top handicappers actually have just because they've been doing it longer and, you know, their approach is different. So you have to have that. But once you have that, you know, you've got to be able to, you know, get out of your own way when the time is right and make good decisions. I talk about the Harvey Wallbanger incident from this weekend where, you know, it wasn't that I almost switched to Harvey Wallbanger. I did switch to Harvey Wallbanger and then switched away from him literally as they're loading in the gate because I'm like, you know what? What did I just learn at the NHC? I learned that if you start panicking early and second-guessing yourself early, and here, this is early on day one of this online contest, the FloCal face-off, you know, look what it cost me at the NHC. It literally, and this isn't like, oh, it sort of did. It actually did. It cost me a day, you know, a trip to day three and minimum $10,000 at the NHC, second-guessing myself on Friday at the NHC. But so I'm like, well, you know, here, we're early in this contest. I think there were 43 races in this online contest last weekend, and the Harvey Wallbanger race came up relatively early. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not ready to abandon my strategy yet. And, you know, I heard Pete Aiello describing Harvey Wallbanger's move before I saw it because on the simulcast feed, you know, you couldn't quite see Harvey Wallbanger yet, but I knew at that point, I had that sinking feeling in my stomach, like, oh, I know what's about to happen. And in the span of 2 seconds, he went from, it seemed like last to first and a runaway victory. So, and from there, it was just a disaster. And, the second guessing took full effect and, you know, ended up being just a very poor performance for me.
It juxtapose what transpired and, you know, put your NHC experience, you know, into the framework here, which we can then use as, you know, the discussion point about how to bob and weave successfully and what, you know, what is incidental versus what is consequential, if you will, you know, meaning, you know, having an approach that is the construct with slight, you know, slight tweaking or, you know, slight adjustment as opposed to just being more or less, you know, a weather vane that's just blown by, you know, the winds.
Yeah, I mean, I remember if we can go back to the NHC in 2019, I don't have my facts in front of me here, but I'm fairly certain the person who led after day one at the NHC last year put in his picks first thing in the morning and then left the casino, mm-hmm. left the hotel.
Yep.
And I'm fairly certain the same thing or something very similar happened in this online contest I've been talking about where the day one leader put in his picks early and left. I don't necessarily think that's the worst approach because in an event like the NHC where you're 36 plays over 2 days, 18 each day for the first 2 days, you know, you've got a lot of time to move up just this year alone. And last year, too, I was at $37 at the end of day one of the NHC this year. Total disaster. I had a $150 day through the first 12 plays on Saturday at the NHC this year, and I missed my first couple. So I put up a score of 150 tournament points, I think, in the span of about nine races on Saturday at the NHC this year. I mean, that's an exceptional performance. And, you know, I did it by kind of sticking with the opinions that I'd formed that morning. So, I hear your question, and I guess it is, you know, let me know when you figure out the answer, because I think there's something to be said for sticking to your convictions and realizing that you've got a lot of time to make up for any mistakes, and a lot of things are going to happen, and you want to be able to see the leaderboard and make adjustments. But at the same time, you need to be able to adjust on the fly. I mean, if I identify a horse in the morning, and I do most of my handicapping the morning of the races. I mean, I do glance at things the night before to get an idea of where I want to focus, but I like to wait and see what the scratches look like and not form too many opinions early out of fear that I'm going to form an opinion and be hesitant to get off of it. But, you know, at the same time, if you identify a horse that's 8-1 on the morning line, and you think, you know, that's probably a pretty reasonable 8-1. I don't think this is a bad morning line. And then the tote board opens and it's 5-2. And your backup pick, who is 8-1, is up at 16-1. I mean, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do. I still don't know. I mean, I guess the thing to do is, you know, in a contest like the NHC with 690 people in it, you've got a lot of people that you have to beat, and you have to put up a pretty exceptional score to, not just win, but even make the final table. So yeah, I think it was Tony Zhao, I hope I'm saying his last name right, did put, you know, kind of analyze the data from this year's NHC, and I think he said next year he's just going to focus all of his plays on, you know, I don't know what if he set an odds limit on it, but he's going to be, you know, focusing on long shots because he thinks that's the best way to make the most impact. So I don't know. Maybe you and I will be talking 6 weeks or a couple months from now, and I'll say, you know what, if I like two or three horses, I'm gonna focus on the one and pick the one in the contest that I think has the biggest price. And you know, maybe that'll lead to more second guessing. I don't know. So I think my short answer to your question is, I just think you have to move forward with conviction and not allow yourself the opportunity to second guess yourself, because if you do that, it'll just drive you nuts.
Well, and I particularly was struck by the Friday recap about looking back. You know, everybody's tendency, if they didn't make it to Sunday, and then, you know, then also from Sunday to the final table, is to think about the immediate. I'll compare this, but looking back at Friday, I mean, those points are just as valuable, and I'll compare it to a thing I wrote years ago, the earliest days when I had Derby Trail set up on Yahoo. And I remember writing a thing, after some failed Triple Crown attempt, and probably after Funny Side, and saying, you know, we're constantly focusing on the Belmont, as, you know, that's where the Triple Crown was lost. And but when you look at you know, the Point Givens and the Affleet Alexes of the world, and the 20 right. Grands and the Bimelex and you know, those that got beat in the Derby, you know, Little Current, I mean, it had to pass 22 horses for him to win before the Derby limited starters to 20. It's just as valuable on Friday and at, you know, at 1:30, that's just as important as what's going to happen, you know, in the last couple of races on Saturday or, you know, during the semifinals on Sunday. And your point was really well made. You had two horses at fair prices that you got off of, and you realize later, I just should have gone ahead and played those horses, especially at that juncture when you weren't worried about where the dollars, you know, where the cutoff line was going to be.
Yeah, and then I took that lesson, and it cost me a much better performance in the online contest last weekend. But similar, you know, to your point, you know, I can go back and I can say, well, if I had actually not gotten off of Harvey Wallbanger, and if Louder Than Bombs had saved just a little bit of ground and won that race at 54-1, how many other contestants can say the same things? I mean, at the NHC this year, I finished 82nd, so I was, I guess, because 71 folks I think made it to day three because of the tie. There were, whatever it is, 10 or 11 people ahead of me that had a better score than I did, that also didn't make it into day three. Well, how many of them were not? I mean, what really cost me making day three of the NHC this year was the kind of the stabbing that went on in those final two mandatories. You had a horse that paid $22 to place in the Santini Turf race. Mm-hmm. You had that huge long shot winning at Golden Gate. Look, if either one of those things doesn't happen, I think I'd probably make it to day three. But there are other people who could say the same thing. And even if there aren't, how many other people had a long shot in another race on Friday or early on Saturday that missed second by a nose or missed the win by a nose? I mean, anybody in that room can take two or three ifs, and next thing you know, they're the NHC champion. I mean, for me, the reason I have talked about taking a step back, and I probably am taking a little bit of a step back. I made light of that in my column on Lone Speed, but you know, we're all decent handicappers. Some are better than others. The idea is, you know, how much longer as a tournament player should I be, you know, putting money into the entry box, you know, not knowing that I'm 100% prepared to not only proceed with conviction, but that I can compete at the same level without making bad decisions and without second guessing myself as the people whose names always seem to be up near the top of the leaderboard. So, you know, I believe that's like in poker. You know, you see a lot, I guess maybe before poker got as big as it is now, but you used to see a lot of the same people at the final table in big events. Well, you know, everybody's dealt the same cards. Everybody's playing the same game by the same rules. There's a reason some people are better than others. And finding out what that edge is and how I can get myself to that level, I think, is maybe the first step. And then refining the approach and moving forward with, you know, a healthier degree of conviction is probably second.
And it, you know, when you bring up the, you know, the two big prices from that allowance race Saturday at Gulfstream, and make a parallel to was it the cap horse at Golden Gate, it was the mandatory that
it was
the two firsters. There was the two first time starters, and one was going to be 20 or 30 to 1, and one was going to be 40 to 1. And there were people that, you know, that were handicapped, though. In fact, they were, when Pete joins us, Pete will remember maybe what the specific was, but there was somebody that was with us that simply, you know, that was basically going to use one or the other firsters and ended up using the wrong one. It's a similar scenario.
Right. Yep. And I think John Nichols had the right one in that race you're talking about. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we can all do it. I guess the idea, if you're a tournament player, is if you've got the handicapping skill and you've got the right approach, eventually good things will happen. I mean, you know, you maybe won't win. I mean, let's go back to the example I gave from the Hawthorne contest last March, where I was in the lead in that televised contest going into the Florida Derby. You know, if Hidden Scroll is allowed to kind of go on the lead, does he win the Florida Derby last year and beat Maximum Security? I don't know if he does or not, but I think I made the right play in it from a contest perspective. I mean, I bet everything I had on the horse that I thought was the most likely winner. And if Hidden Scroll does what I think, you know, many people thought he was going to do, he wins that race, and I probably win the contest. So I just think you have to trust your stuff. If you don't trust your stuff, you're kind of beaten at the outset. So, you know, trusting your opinions and your approach, I think, is critical to it. And no, you're not going to win every time. I mean, I've mentioned a few people by name. Like, just take Paul Sherman. I think Paul's widely regarded. Garrett Skiba, for instance. Garrett is one of the best of all time. And, you know, when he would enter contests, I know he's, you know, taking a break or, you know, maybe a permanent break, I'm not sure. But, you know, he didn't win every single time, but he won a lot. So I think if you get to that level, the Paul Sherman, the Garrett Skiba level, or whomever, and you trust your stuff and you move forward with conviction, like I keep saying, yeah, you're going to lose more than you win, like anybody else will. But you'll get enough of those wins to where it becomes a profitable endeavor for you.
Well, and I guess to Tony Joe's analysis point regarding how to go forward next year, the guy that personifies, you know, what that conclusion seems to be saying, at least, you know, one of the conclusions, is Ray Arsenault. And Ray is one of those guys that you know, is either going to, you know, be near the top or win. I mean, he's now had a win and a third, or he's a guy that is going to miss cuts because he's a free swinger, and that's been his approach, you know, even before we had the opportunity to, you know, to really tear these plays apart. And so, you know, the trite way of summarizing is to say, you know, there's lots of ways to skin the proverbial cat. But you whatever you're going to do, stick to your plan and stick to your, you know, what gets you confident in yourself. It doesn't really matter what your approach is going to be, as long as you're, you know, you feel good about it and you follow through.
Yeah. And if I hope I'm not misstating what Tony's analysis was, but I'm fairly certain what he said was he ran a bunch of models.
Yeah.
And he found that if you stick to horses at a certain odds level and above,
correct,
he made it to day three, I think it was 17% of the time or something like that, versus mm-hmm. taking different approaches, which, well, so, I mean, you know, his, I can't second guess his analysis or his data. I mean, he's the master of that kind of thing. But, like, personally for me, if you told me that I could follow a certain approach and it would get me to day three at the NHC 17% of the time, I would not follow that approach. I mean, that means you're missing day three 83% of the time. I mean, and again, we all know I'm not the best at this. I mean, I've been to the NHC twice, and I made it once, and I came within $3.20 of making it the second time. Now, that could be a fluke, and I might qualify. Who knows? I may never qualify for the NHC again, or I might qualify 10 more times, and I might not get a sniff of day three any of those times, so I'll be eating my words. But for me, you know, I'd rather play my way and take, you know, not follow a certain format or a certain formula or a certain rule set and go into it knowing, like, well, yeah, there's an 83% chance I won't make it to day three. You know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe others disagree.
Right.
Maybe every other tournament player would kill for an opportunity or, you know, a guaranteed 17% chance over the course of a lifetime of making it to day three at the NAC. To me, that doesn't sound that attractive to me. I don't know. Call me crazy.
One question I want you to include before we break. Your handicapping method. How are you picking horses these days?
Well, I use Formulator. I watch a lot of replays. You know, I used to use some proprietary products, and there, you know, the positive results were just too spotty. So I've kind of, you know, abandoned all that. I do like to read. I'll tell you what. Steve Crist wrote something not that long ago where he was talking about, you know, how closely he obviously follows the New York race. And he made a great point. It's a point I've always believed, but I never vocalized it or never even really put it into words. To be a winning horse player, you really have to not just watch the replays and see the past performances and watch the entire race card and make trip notes, et cetera. You almost have to experience those race cards, those races, as they're happening. You have to, you know, have an idea of, okay, well, why was this horse bet down the way that it was? What were the circumstances that led to this horse being bet the way that it was? And why did the horse run so poorly? I don't think there's any substitute for experiencing those past performances as they're happening. Yes, we can watch replays. Yes, we can use Formulator and figure out what race was a key race. But I think that people like me who don't play the races every single day and who, you know, don't watch replays of every race that happens on the major circuits, we're always going to be at a disadvantage to people who do experience those races in real time, whether they're betting or not, whether they're playing in contests or not. There's no substitute for for experiencing them as they happen and knowing why things happen the way they did. And I'll give an example. This is one popping into my head, and I'm probably going to get the names wrong, but I'm going to go back to the 2001 Kentucky Oaks, and Flute, Fleet Renee, Golden Ballet, maybe not all three of them ran in the Oaks. I mean, I know Flute did. She won. But, you know, there were some prep races where they had beaten each other, and I really felt like the wrong horse was favored going into the Oaks. And there was a prep race, like the Ashlands, I think, where one of them had beaten the other. And I was like, you know what? I like Flute anyway, even though on paper it may look like Flute isn't the horse to beat here. I think there's a reason she lost whichever prep race that was, and I think there's a reason that other horse beat that other filly, and I think Flute's the play, and she was. And there's no way I would have cast a win bet on Flute in the Kentucky Oaks had I not literally been experiencing all those races and the run-up to them as they happened. So I know that's an example from almost 20 years ago, but you know, the truth is, I think that has to be a part of horse playing, is just consuming as much of the experience as you can. But to answer your question, I use Formulator, I watch replays, I try to find excuses for poor efforts in, you know, odds affecting races. If I see that, you know, the horse, there's a horse running a Gulfstream, and the last start the horse was 4-1 and had a bad break, or was off the rail too far, or maybe just checked ever so slightly. Sometimes those things don't come through in the past performances, and, consuming as much of that as possible. I'll give you another quick example. Ken Faka, who won the San Vicente a couple years back, was, I believe, coming out of a maiden win. And in that maiden win, he checked so badly. I can't believe the horse even finished. I can't believe he even finished the race. But he did. He won the maiden special weight event. I think maybe it had been an allowance race. But regardless, the race that he ran in before the San Vicente was a monster effort. And I said, you know, I don't care about pace projections. I don't care which Baffert horse is in here. This horse, Kantaka, showed me something, and you don't see it on paper. And he won. I think he was like 10 or 11 to 1 that day. So what I'm going to try to do during this little mini temporary maybe break that I'm on is try to consume more things in real time and not just rely on replay watching and, you know, speed figures and identifying key races, et cetera, because I really think there's no substitute for that.
Well, and clearly you're a West Point guy, because Kentucky. You're pushing Chestertown, and now you're pushing Kentucky, another West Point runner.
Yeah, I've cashed a few tickets on West Point runners over the years. Now that you mention it, I don't know that I have any particular allegiance to anything. I'd say somebody asked me that recently. If there's any set of connections that have been good to me. And, I don't know. I feel like I've cashed some nice tickets on. I'll tell you, the jockey, and if I gave you 20 guesses, Steve, you'll never get this. The most positive ROI jockey for me is Mikhail Barzalona, because I had Monterosso in the Breeders' Cup. I'm not the Breeders' Cup, rather the Dubai World Cup. It's at 40-1. And then the Breeders' Cup turf winner out in California, got the name, because I'm on the radio now, the name's escaping me. But the horse that he won right after Good Magic won, the Godolphin horse that won the Breeders' Cup turf. Why is his name escaping me? It's only been a couple of years. Nevertheless, Barcelona was on that horse too. So if you went back and looked at every bet I've ever made throughout my life, Mikhail Barcelona, I need to buy him. I need to buy him a drink whenever I cross his path.
I know exactly who you mean too. He Caracanti won the mile race, but it was the one.
He was the one horse.
He
ran second. How do I not get that?
I know. I can see him. I can see him running.
His name is one word.
Yeah,
one word.
Talismanic.
Talismanic. Yeah. So Mikhail Barcelona. But as far as West Point, I mean, they they paid $2 million for this horse. I don't know a lot about West Point. I've never owned horses, and I don't know much about the process that goes into deciding which horse you spend $2 million on, but I must have seen something that they like. So I'm looking forward to seeing that horse run his next race. And if I'm in a contest that day and that race that he's in is on the contest card, I'll tell all the contest players competing against you right now, Chestertown will be my pick.
All right, it's out. You can book it. So on the next round, maybe we'll see if he's going to show up in the next round. You can watch for him on the future wager. Did you get a chance to get a future wager in on him in Vegas?
No, somebody said there was basically no casino offering future wagers. I mean, I didn't feel like driving all over town and finding a place that had it.
It's with Westgate, right? Westgate or South Point?
Well, I saw something online that showed him around 50-1, and he feels
no,
like I'd rather take 25 or 30 to 1 on Derby Day than play him at 50 to 1 now.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we'll see if I can get it. But, hey, real quick before you let me go, I don't get a chance to talk to Steve Bick. What are your thoughts on Wells Bayou and Three Technique as Derby contenders? Because I've kind of got them from, you know, if I did a Derby top 10 list, it would be based in large part on value, not necessarily likelihood of victory, but horses that I think are offering good value, maybe a little under the radar. And I've got Wells Bayou and Three Technique up there. Where do those two stack on your list, if I may be so bold as to ask?
Well, I thought that Three Technique's performance was very encouraging, and frankly, especially because Engelhardt is kind of slogging through a tough winter, but the way in which he was finishing at in the Smarty Jones, I thought boded well. So he's got every right to continue to improve on that front. Wells Bayou, I can't say that I've got, you know, any particular feel for him yet. I mean, Silver Prospector, I knew Silver Prospector. I had a nice feel for and had, you know, nice expectations for his performance, especially given, you know, what had transpired opening day at Oaklawn and, you know, and then subsequently Gold Street was, you know, a complete throw against go against.
Yeah.
Wells Bayou, I can't give you like a heartfelt response. He's kind of in that, you know, that 10th to 15th zone. If you know, I stopped doing top 10 lists and whatever lists because they're just, you know, they're just pointless to me.
Pointless. Not only that, not only are they pointless, but we've been talking about this for the last many minutes here. They mess with your mind. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you tab a horse, you think you're being clever, you list a horse at number one or somewhere, you know, top three or something early on, and it's like you want to be right. And, you know, I'm maybe some more experienced horse players and more disciplined horse players are better at that than me, but this goes right into the contest conversation. It's, you know, a failure or a fear. Let's put it this way: a fear of jumping off a good opinion, a fear. How are you going to feel if you identify a horse early and you talk yourself out of it? I'll just give one quick example. Last year in the Kentucky Derby, you know, I Spinoff was going to be my horse, and Country House was going to be kind of another horse I sprinkled in there, and people started whispering, "Well, you know, these hard spuns, they don't run that great on a sloppy track," or maybe Spinoff, maybe he didn't look so good in his workout. I'm like, all right, am I? I've been talking about Spinoff for 2 weeks. Am I really going to get off of him here on Derby Day and then watch him win? And I just wasn't able to do that. So I was debating, as I wrote in my column on Lone Speed, between Country House and Spinoff, and I went with Spinoff, and you know, look what happened. Of course, I had to try, but I mean, it would have been a much bigger payday if I had just allowed myself the right to abandon an earlier opinion, knowing that abandoning that opinion was going to cost me a lot of money. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Kind of in that same category, yeah.
No doubt. And especially when it comes to the classics, and it's why, as Steve Davidowitz wrote in Betting Thoroughbreds, it's why the post Triple Crown season, the summer and fall, there's outlandish value to be found because people are still clinging to impressions that were made in the first half of the year leading up to the Triple Crown season, and they still want to believe that, you know, that their horse who had a bad trip in the Derby is still going to be, you know, a contender for 3-year-old champion when the dust settles, and it makes for skewed pricing in the, you know, all the 3-year-old races after Belmont.
Yeah, that's true. Although, you know, the flip side of that is a horse like Keen Ice, who goes and wins the Travers at a big price, who, you know, I think a lot of that was based on the performance and not just the preps, but in the Kentucky Derby itself. So, I mean, like anything else in racing, it works both ways, but you're 100% correct in that there seems to be a disproportionate amount of value put in performance in the marquee races. I mean, at the end of the day, the Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cup, they're just horse races. You know, the horses don't know that it's a special race. They're just races like all the rest of them. So, you know, if you're that disciplined, and I'm not, to treat the Kentucky Derby and all the others like any other race, which it is, there's probably value there to be had, for sure.
Well, it's always valuable to check in with Justin Du, who's got a original and clever approach to the game, and you can follow him on Twitter, Justin Du, D-E-W, like early morning dew, and LoneSpeed.com, and Justin, a pleasure, no matter the topic. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, and next time, I want you to have me on when I finally win one of these contests, and you got to promise me you'll give me a chance to come back and brag on your show.
Absolutely, absolutely. That in fact, I talked to Michelle Ravencraft and Holly Short this morning because we want to start to get back into the habit of having whether it's a big betting challenge weekend winner, or whether it's just somebody that succeeded over the weekend and won a seat. We kind of got away from that. We were having them on a regular basis, and I want to start getting them again. So I asked Holly and Michelle to kind of deliver some of the winners that might want to come on and talk. So absolutely, you're gonna get one of these days. You come too close, and you've got too many good work habits to not get a big one.
Well, thanks, Steve. Hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Justin Du, everybody, and follow him. He's a lot of fun. And going back to when I first met him, which was at Churchill, when he was doing they were doing those video reports, KentuckyDerby.com, and he and Michelle Yu. A million years ago. Feels like it anyway. It would have been hard spun. It would have been, so 2007? Yeah, right? That sounds right. Feels right. Justin, too. That was fun. Pete Fornatel, we got to get Pete in here. Then Sid, Seth, and more. I think Armando De La Cerda is going to join us. I didn't get a chance to talk to him after Cheermeister's first stake win. So we're going to try to get to Armando as well. Back after this, though, hour two, Pete Fornatel, then Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. We want to talk with Sid not just about the Fountain of Youth winner, but about the broodmare compatibility analysis, because he sent one to me for Voltarine, who's on her way to Kentucky to get covered by Motown. And I was fascinated by it. The information in it, it's tremendous. And it just so happens I got an email last night from somebody who was curious about which, nicking systems and which, programs. So the timing is perfect, his question and Sid's visit today. Back after this, though. Pete, stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com.
That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Your feet in the air and your head on the ground. Try this trick and spin it, yeah. Your head will collapse, there's nothing in it. And you ask yourself, where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind?
We're back at the races and about, 5 minutes into hour two after a fun and actually much longer visit with Justin Dew than I expected. And